We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
This is my kind of commentary on the state of retail right now. You've got a bunch of folks who see digital changing the landscape. You've got customers demanding to have experiences that meet where they want. I mean, if you're, you know, world stat, if you're under 35 on the planet, there's a 1 in 4 chance the first time you ever accessed the internet was on your smartphone. That's incredible. So it's fundamentally changing the way that people expect to engage the physical world.
I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation, and this is Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. The digital and physical worlds of retail are continuing to merge, and today we're going to be talking about the future of retail with someone who's helping to create that. Healy Cipher is CEO of Zabello, a company that creates some remarkable interactive kiosks for retailers. In just a minute, we'll talk to Healy about the next generation of customer engagement and the technology that's making it possible. I am happy to be joined by my co-host, my friend, and my colleague. Wouldn't you be upset if I didn't say that?
I'd be devastated.
Yeah. Chris Stewart. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Bill. How's it going?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I am fantastic.
Why are you fantastic?
I'm fantastic because we're here with Healy, who is one of the retail innovators that we love to profile.
Well, welcome, Healy.
It's real.
Thanks. I have to be honest about something.
Please.
I'm kind of jealous because you both have really good radio voices.
Mm.
Oh. I'm feeling a little self-conscious.
I don't think you should.
Okay.
Turn up the bass.
Thank you. Yeah.
Healy, Zabello. You didn't just happen to Zabello. What brought you there? How has this journey evolved?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So, the journey actually started, I think it was 8 years ago, when I made the decision to join a student of mine's startup in Palo Alto. I was a TA, and he was like, hey, come be my VP of biz dev. And so I joined this company called Milo. It got bought by eBay. And during the course of the due diligence period, I got to know the CTO, a guy named Mark, pretty well. And he goes, you know, Healy, I think you should be my chief of staff. And I was like, 25 or something. And I go, sounds awesome. Let's do that. And he was an exceptional technologist, but really didn't like doing sales. And this is back when it was this bigger company. It was eBay and PayPal and GSI. And so I started doing sales for this entire company. And as we brought retailers in from all over the world for hours and literally sometimes days of meetings on e-com technology, they'd all say the same thing. They'd say, you know, this is really cool. Now, what tech do you have for my physical stores, which are 95% of my sales? And we had nothing to say. And it got so embarrassing that I finally went to Bob, the CFO, and said, can I please start a new division? We're going to call the Retail Innovation Division of eBay. And so we took 20 of us, we went to an off-campus secret lab, and we started working on this thesis. And it was, how do we bring the best of online thinking into the physical world, where you think about the most common customer journeys that would take place in a store, and you kind of weight it by value and volume. So what do the most people do? That's volume. What do the, you know, highest value customers do? That's value. And then find the friction points, just like you would do in an e-com conversion funnel, and try to introduce technology to solve it. And so we started working with Nordstrom, and we started working with Rebecca Minkoff and Kate Spade and Toys R Us, may they rest in peace, and you know, a bunch of other brands. And we started building these experiences out and realizing a very common truth, which was it was really hard to do. And I don't know how many times you've seen these like pitches on Stores of the Future, or you've walked into one of these Stores of the Future, and you know, a bunch of the screens are off or nothing works, but it was a big press piece and that's what they really cared about. It's because the underlying technology is so hard to build,
right,
that they spend all of their budget on just getting it to launch and then they forget about it, kind of launch and forget. And so we left to start a company called Oak that built the first purpose-created operating system for interactive experiences. So kiosks is one way of thinking about it. We started with these interactive mirrors in the fitting rooms of Ralph Lauren and Rebecca Minkoff, which is really cool. And we then merged with Zabello to create the first turnkey solution for digitizing your fleet. So an example of this could be, you know, I don't know, your Orvis, a brand that I love. Do you guys know Orvis?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fly fishing.
Sure. Absolutely.
So let's say, you know, they say, you know, we want to do digital signage on the walls. Because right now we spend a bunch of time printing a bunch of this stuff and shipping it and then trying to figure out what to put on the right wall. And it's just really expensive. We'd rather just have digital signage that's up there. And it'd be really cool if that digital signage was listening to data events. So if it rained outside, we showed that we sold hunter boots and barber jackets, or barber jackets. Sorry. There's a U there, but it's not pronounced like that. Or, you know, we have this new buy online, pick up in store initiative. And it'd be great if someone walks in and the moment they walk in, there's something that welcomes them. And they can say, yes, my name's Bill and I'd like to get these, you know, pair of overalls, and they're ready. But all of those decisions, all of those dreams of stores of the future that retailers have today is a tremendous amount of work to get it done. Because you got to figure out what piece of hardware you're going to put it on. And you RFP a bunch of vendors and find a bunch of screens and then figure out how to install it and how to maintain it and how to warrant it. Then you got to figure out what software you're going to put on there. And is it another RFP process? And by the time all that's done, it's like you have to have a PhD in creating a store of the future. And so people just give up. And so we've merged together to form this single company that can be a single hand to shake versus throat to choke. Where if you want to digitize your fleet, you come to us. We'll advise you. We'll show you the software partners that are great. You can build on the same hardware. And it's all through the same integrated system to run all of the screens in your store. That's the idea.
You know, listening to you, it's the enormity of the task at hand. I mean, you look at, a lot of these stores are older stores. They weren't built, you know, with these technologies in mind.
That's right.
So all of the work that you have to do there. And then, you know, what works best, where it works best. Where do you start? I mean, that to me would be one of the biggest challenges. How do you get people to kind of see the art of the possible as opposed to the everything that would get them to that point? Because to me, if I came in and I said, this is, and you said, well, we're going to go to, it'd be like, okay, I am overwhelmed. I mean, just overwhelmed.
I think it's really easy for retailers to fall into a trap, which is tech for the sake of tech.
Yep.
And we see it all the time. And so, you know, all of a sudden they're like, well, we need a robot to greet you when you walk in and a hologram to look you in the eyes and suggest that you should not wear pants at this moment in time or whatever it is. Or like a disco ball that's going to come down with fog machines and lasers. And there's no actual thesis. This is my kind of commentary on the state of retail right now. You've got a bunch of folks who see digital changing the landscape. You've got customers demanding to have experiences that meet where they want. I mean, if you're, you know, world stat, if you're under 35 on the planet, there's a 1 in 4 chance the first time you ever accessed the internet was on your smartphone. That's incredible. So it's fundamentally changing the way that people expect to engage the physical world. I mean, you take a kid into a Best Buy aisle, the TV aisle. What do they try to do to every TV?
Swipe
it. Yeah. And then you've also got these realities, you know, brick and mortar is facing where expenses are going up. It's tough. And they see digital winning. So the business case is actually really there, but there's no kind of consistent thesis that I've seen. There's not been a thesis of, you know, what we were talking about before. Okay, so, you know, online, you go from the way you think about a conversion funnel is how many people go to a homepage or the landing page? And from there, how many people then go to a product page? Then from there, how many go to the cart? And from there, how many people check out? If you take that same thesis and apply it to a store, that is where you start. Mm-hmm. And all the stats are the same. So like you walk into a store, you cross the threshold, you're probably doing one of two things. One is you know what you want. You're searching for it. Search. Or the second is you're just there to kind of browse around. Inspiration. Browse. Search versus browse. What does that sound like? That's a landing page. As you then walk and you see the mannequins or the shelves, you're assessing the products on there and the visual merchandise, and you're making a decision if you're going to show interest. Pulling into your cart. What is that? A product page. That's right. It. As you bring things into the fitting room or put them into your cart, that's like a cart, and cash wrap is checkout. And so if you start to look at these moments of drop-off through that conversion funnel, the numbers are really interesting. So one of the numbers I think is so interesting, if someone sees a product they like on the shelf, but the size, cut, or color that they want isn't physically in front of them, 48% of people will not ask for help, and 8 out of 10 times, it's in the stockroom of that store. That's a real stat. Another one is if someone sees a line they just perceive to be over 7 minutes long, 79% of customers will abandon with products in their hands. And we've done this. You know, you walk into Safeway on a Saturday morning, you see these insane lines, and you go, well, I don't need TP after all. But then, you know, there's these other moments, which is if someone has an amazing experience with a customer or with an associate, the chance they buy goes up like 5x. If they get into a fitting room, the chance they buy is 2 out of 3. So what are these moments to reduce friction in some places, to enhance other experiences? That's where you start. It's using a little bit of math and a little bit of EQ. And it's not just, oh, well, I heard AI is really big. We should definitely do that. Or I heard beacons are great. Let's put them everywhere. What are you going to do with those beacons? You're going to have someone download your app. Okay, that's maybe 1% of your customers. Turn on notifications. Okay. Allow Bluetooth. Okay. And then this wonderful stat, I don't know if you've heard this. If someone walks into a store with your app downloaded and it welcomes them into the store based on a beacon, they don't really care. If you do another unsolicited notification within 30 minutes, the chance that they delete your app forever goes up 500%.
Really?
Yeah.
I believe that because it's creepy.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. It's creepy.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, that is what you were saying earlier about the correlation between what you find on a website and what you actually do in a physical store. That is really interesting. The thing that I think people focus on more than anything else when we're talking about new technologies in retail are the things that people see, tactile. But really, a lot of the technology that is helping retailers today or that they're incorporating into their business are things that you can't see. And so it's just a realization that fun to see a robot, but it's what is making that experience for the customer a better experience. It's not a robot. It's the ability to get the customer where they want, when they want, at the price point that they want to pay. And so it just seems to me a lot of people are really into the little bells and whistles. There's a lot of bells and whistles. They just can't hear them or see them.
Yeah. So the way you classified it was absolutely perfect. There's explicit tech, which is the things that other customers see. Could be touchscreens, could be like, apps or whatever it is. But the implicit tech, which is, to me, the most exciting emerging part of retail right now, that kind of inherent technology that is making the store self-aware, that is where it gets. Because here's an example of a tech solution you'd never see. So we talked about if someone sees an item they like on the shelf, but it's not physically there, they won't ask for help. And that's one out of two times, which is leaving a lot of money on the table. Now, what if you actually had a sense of the velocity of sales or requests for items in the store ahead of time? And so instead of putting out the two red polos on a Saturday morning, you put out five red polos because you know you're going to go through it. Now, that's not tech you would see. That's just machine learning in the background that's making decisions about what inventory you put in what place based on what sales data, but that actually still solves a problem. And that's an example of, I think, what you're talking about. And this kind of, we were hosting a big group of Alibaba executives a few months ago, and this is what they were thinking of. Actually, it was the most interesting conversation. They go, yeah, well, China's just really ahead of the US in commerce. And I said, oh, well, what do you mean? I said, well, you'll see, and, reminder, an online marketplace, you'll see that e-com kind of has a cap. It's about 20%. And then past there, I can't really grow a whole lot more. And I said, oh, what are you doing, online marketplace? And I said, well, you'll see. Well, the answer was they bought the biggest malls and store operators in the country of China. That was their answer. That's how Alibaba is growing its business. Mm-hmm. And they're using a tremendous amount of intelligence beneath those stores to create awesome experiences because they're getting the infrastructure right now. And that's a benefit a lot of the next wave of retail has. Like I think about the Warby Parkers and the Bonobos and the Kuyan and the MGemi, and they're able to open up small format stores now that are technology-based. They have they're electrified, they have data, they've got great Wi-Fi, basic stuff. They can implement things like RFID so they get their accuracy up from an industry average of 65%, which is real, to 99%. And so now they can build real awesome solutions that aren't just a gimmick, where a lot of the brands that have been out there for a while are having to kind of figure out how they put some icing on the cake because all that work is so crazy that all they can really do sometimes is a gimmick thing.
Right.
So it's a really, God, retail's at such an interesting time.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
It's just incredible.
I'm thinking about consumers and how quickly they get used to technology and then begin expecting it. You mentioned buy online, pick up in store. That's really started coming to the forefront maybe 5 years ago. People started talking about it, but I think a lot of retailers were, that's getting the inventory right. It's a huge challenge.
Really tough.
Now, everyone is expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got something like connected mirrors in a fitting room. I can go into a fitting room and I can be like, I don't like this color. Can you bring me another color? And I don't ever have to leave. I don't ever have to actually talk in person to an associate. I'm getting used to this. So what's coming down the pike? What are you seeing what do you think consumers are going to be? This is going to be normal in 2 years. Well, I'm going to need something else to be impressed.
Well, so there's really differing opinions on this. I have a very specific opinion. And I think the future is actually going to be something where you walk into the store and you don't really see any technology. It's just beautiful. It's wood, it's metal, it's glass, it's cloth, mm-hmm. it's people. Mm-hmm. But the people are just really helpful and they know a lot. And the store is kind of changing around you as you walk through it, but it's these authentic materials that are kind of coming alive and maybe using voice, maybe using something where it becomes your store. But you're not walking in seeing, as we were joking about before, you know, holograms or lasers or robots. And it's really funny because I'm lucky enough to talk to a bunch of the kind of leaders who are running these big retailers and brands. And you know, we'll ask questions like, hey, what's the relationship, you know, between your company and robots? And I go, because God, I really hope you're not going to try to replace associates with robots. They go, oh, I'm so glad you said that. Because people don't really like that. You know, there's this universe where we're so connected, a reprieve from that, and the ability to connect with someone on a human level is actually really, really nice. And so that's the future that I believe we're going to be headed towards, is one where it's about the experience, it's about service, it's about urgency, but it's not necessarily about gimmicky tech that's just in your face and trying to pull you in for the sake of that tech.
I agree with you 100,000%. I think that's brilliant. And I believe that retailers get it. They understand it. The investment that they're making in the training and the retention of their associates, their employees, not just because of the tight labor market, but because it takes an investment. You've got to not only want that employee to want to work there, but they've got to be able to help out the customer.
And can we talk about that for 2 seconds?
Sure.
So there's a bunch of reasons that like these stores of the future fail. The number one thing you'd already hit on, Bill, which is infrastructure. Like, you know, the internet's not good or they don't know inventory counts. The number two reason, though, is the associates aren't bought in and it doesn't make their life better.
Right.
And there's this idea, this classification of types of applications called B2B applications, which should never be called that. Because that implies you need an instruction manual and that it's okay if it's a grid of buttons. Which is wrong. We are all consumers of technology, exactly what you're saying, Chris. And so you have to get something that makes the associate's life 10 times easier and makes them 10 times more effective for them to really embrace this. Because I can tell you right now, if they don't love it, if they don't pull people in, if it's not a co-creation experience, or if they think that it's they're competing with this thing for jobs, it will fail and they will make sure it fails.
Right.
You know, early trials for self-checkout in grocery stores. Remember how many of those were off all the time? We assumed it was because they were just not working. You know what the real answer was? The shift manager unplugged them.
Yeah.
Because if too many people went through the self-service, they wouldn't get the staffing ratios they needed, that they knew they needed to keep the throughput, and it would hurt their store sales. It's stuff like that. And it's real. That's the ground level reality. The difference between what seems nice in like, you know, an office in the 42nd floor and then being on the ground, that's the difference. So anyway, just wanted to point that associates should be a primary stakeholder in any tech moving forward.
It's funny you mentioned the self-checkout thing, because what is the thing that you always see in the self-checkout line is at least one store associate standing there, because people are still going to, I don't know what happened. I'm looking around blindly. Please help me. It's not taking my credit card. I don't know how this thing works.
Yeah.
I still need people there.
That's right. So, you know, a good example of this is our biggest client as a company is McDonald's. Mm-hmm. They're obviously the kind of leader in QSR. And so they have actually begun, the first company to do a full fleet digitization of self-ordering kiosks, which is obviously the core bread and butter. Mm-hmm. And the big thing that we heard when people were being a little negative was, you're just kicking people out of their jobs, you know? And we said, well, actually, look at what's happening. Because what was happening was, they had a greeter who was there, who now wasn't like, what's your order? Okay, move on. They were just being nice. Welcome to McDonald's. Here's how these work. Let me know if you have any questions. And then it was a reallocation. So they actually had to hire more people because they couldn't keep up with all the orders coming through and the kitchen wasn't productive enough.
Yep.
So that's the people, I think they create these narratives in their heads around the kind of villainizing technology sometimes, when the reality is there's nothing better than human experience, but technology can really help.
Yep.
That increasingly humans like to be in control of experiences. The reality is that if you have a phone with something on it, it actually becomes less convenient than if you walk up to a kiosk that's single purpose. It's one thing, one time, you're done. And this can be often one of the closest allies to the people on the ground, because How fun is it to take someone's order over and over and over again? It's not that fun.
Well, I will tell you the interesting thing to me about those kiosks at McDonald's was I was down at in Florida a few weeks ago. There was a McDonald's that had, you know, three of those set up. And the number of people that went to them, started them, and then turned around and then got in the line. It was just amazing to me that didn't finish the order. And I think a lot of it was just because they had a question. They were getting a little bit frustrated. And they were watching people in line get through faster than they were by using that kiosk.
Yeah.
So anyway, we are running short on time. We could talk to you forever. This has been incredibly, incredibly interesting.
Okay.
And I think that if you, you know, we'll have you back in 6 months or a year. And you'll think about, you know, the evolution of retail, the technologies that are impacting it. 6 months to a year, you can have an entirely different conversation. You know, some of the things we talked about today just be, you know, old news.
Sure.
And so anyway, there is a part of the program you may not know about if you've never listened to Retail Gets Real before, and it's called Rapid Fire. What we're going to do is we're going to ask you a question.
It's like a Freudian thing
where you're going to, it's not a secret blot. It's, okay. It's just, so we're going to ask you a question and you're going to answer with the first thing that comes to your mind.
Oh, are you, I'm just going to, disclaimer, it's on you now. It's not my fault what comes out of my mouth. You created this scenario.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire. Thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
Let's go. Chris, start us off.
What is a weird quirk that you have?
Oh, when I wear sunglasses, I can't stop putting my eyebrows up like this.
That
I don't know why.
You have to describe what you're doing. This is a radio
show. Oh, yeah.
Show.
Sorry. It's like when you try to not use your hands to get your sunglasses up on your nose, kind of like pull your eyebrows up.
Yeah.
I can't stop doing it. I didn't know I did that until I saw a video of me doing that. I'm really self-conscious
of that. We'll put a video of that on retailgetsreal.com.
That'd be great. Thank you.
What kind of super villain would you be?
I would be one that could turn invisible. And I would create havoc for people where they wouldn't know it was me and they'd never know it was me and their life would just start to really suck.
My next question was going to be, where would you go if you were invisible? But you've answered that.
My enemy's home base.
Let's go with, what is the strangest thing you have ever eaten?
Don't judge me on this.
You don't judge you.
I was in Iceland and I had horse, puffin, and whale separately.
Wait, puffin?
Yeah, I know. My wife was really not happy about that either. The horse was delicious.
Wow. So, speaking of delicious, what's the one thing that's always in your fridge?
Half and half. For coffee that I make in the morning. I'm really bad at stocking the fridge, but I never forget half and half.
Very good.
Do you ask permission or beg forgiveness?
Forgiveness. I don't beg.
That sounded
weird.
Okay, so last question. Get out the ink blot. Last question. What is the one app that you cannot live without?
I mean,
this is what breaks him.
That's an impossible. I mean, it's like I have a core five that I have to use.
But there's one. There's four that you can't. They're out of order.
I have to pick one. To live my life.
It's the thing that you just, it's your go-to. One app. One.
Not the stand, like if I say Messenger, that's boring.
I mean, if that's the one if you can't live one, without.
Yeah.
We're all
yeah,
about
I mean,
honesty here.
Man. iMessage, yeah, 100%. Oh, Slack is really Slack.
Okay.
It's Slack. Yeah.
We knew it was going to come eventually. Healy Cipher. If I wanted to learn more about Zivello, where would I go?
You can go to Zivello.com, Zivello.com. Or if you want to see more of stuff like this, you can go to HealyCipher.com, which is just my name.
Awesome. Healy, thank you so much for taking time
Chris,
to join
Bill,
us today.
Thank
we
you.
Really appreciate it. Incredibly interesting.
It's
Chris,
a lot of fun.
Co-host, friend, colleague, thank you again.
You're so welcome.
You're great. And thank all of you out there for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. We're going to post information about the topics we discussed today on our website, retailgetsreal.com, where you can also find links to other episodes. Thanks for listening. And if you like Retail Gets Real, please tell your colleagues and friends about the show or give us a rating on your podcast app. Have a great day. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by NRF. For more information about the National Retail Federation, visit us online at nrf.com.